This is the weekly podcast from the Journal of Neurosurgery. Welcome to the Journal of Neurosurgery podcast for November 12th, 2010. I'm Natalie Pincham. Topics covered in the articles featured in this podcast are infection, epilepsy, vascular disorders, and trauma. Balamuthia mandrillaris brain abscess, successfully treated with complete surgical excision and prolonged combination antimicrobial therapy. A case report by Joseph Doyle and colleagues. The authors report an unusual case of an amoebic brain abscess in an immunocompetent 80-year-old woman. Free-living amoebic infections, such as Balamuthia mandrillaris, are rare and generally fatal when they disseminate to the brain. Balamuthia is commonly found in fresh water and soil, and, as this case demonstrates, can present with a rash that is difficult to diagnose before central nervous system dissemination. Free-living amoebae are difficult to recognize in tissue. Diagnosis therefore requires careful histopathological examination of tissue and newer polymerase chain reaction and serological assays are now available. Importantly, this case illustrates the potential for cure using complete resection and prolonged antimicrobial agents, in contrast to previous reports in which patients had biopsies taken of multiple brain abscesses and either did not survive or had varying degrees of neurological impairment, this patient survived without any neurological sequelae. Her prompt neurosurgical intervention, despite her age, may have played an important role in her outcome. Optimal cerebrospinal fluid magnesium ion concentration for vasodilatory effect and duration after intracisternal injection of magnesium sulfate solution in a canine subarachnoid hemorrhage model. A laboratory investigation by Kentaro Mori and co-workers. These authors have previously described the novel vasodilatory effect of the intracisternal injection of magnesium sulfate solution on spastic cerebral arteries after subarachnoid hemorrhage. However, the optimal cerebrospinal fluid, or CSF, magnesium ion concentration needed to cause vasodilation of the spastic arteries and the duration of the effect after the injection have not been examined. Thus, in the present study, the authors followed the changes in the arterial diameters of spastic cerebral arteries by using canine subarachnoid hemorrhage models to elucidate the optimal CSF magnesium ion concentration and the temporal profile of this vasodilatory effect. The reversible effect of the intracisternal injection of magnesium sulfate solution on spastic arteries requires a CSF magnesium ion concentration of more than 3 milliequivalent per liter. The vasodilatory effect continues for 3 hours after injection. These results suggest that the continuous infusion or intermittent intracisternal injection of magnesium sulfate is needed to maintain the optimal CSF magnesium ion concentration and to constantly ameliorate cerebral vasospasm. Effects of post-traumatic carbamylated erythropoietin therapy on reducing lesion volume and hippocampal cell loss, enhancing angiogenesis and neurogenesis, and improving functional outcome in rats following traumatic brain injury. A laboratory investigation by Yi Shan and colleagues. Erythropoietin, essential for erythropoiesis, also improves functional recovery after brain injury. However, erythropoietin increases hematocrit, which may be associated with its side effects for treatment of brain injury. Carbamylated erythropoietin was modified from erythropoietin and does not affect hematocrit, but is equally as effective as erythropoietin in neuroprotection. In this article, the authors compared the efficacy of a single dose with a triple dose of carbamylated erythropoietin for treatment of traumatic brain injury. Traumatic brain injury was induced over the left parietal cortex in rats. Carbamylated erythropoietin was administered intraperitoneally after brain injury, either at 6 hours for the single dose group or at 6, 24, and 48 hours for the triple dose group. Compared with saline treatment, the single treatment of carbamylated erythropoietin significantly reduced lesion volume and hippocampal cell loss, enhanced angiogenesis and neurogenesis in the injured cortex and hippocampus, and significantly improved functional recovery in rats after injury. Importantly, triple dosing of carbamylated erythropoietin further reduced lesion volume and improved functional recovery and neurogenesis compared with single dosing. The author's results indicate that carbamylated erythropoietin has considerable therapeutic potential in TBI and related pathologies, and furthermore, repeated dosing might have important impacts on clinical outcomes. Glutamate clearance mechanisms in resected cortical dysplasia, a laboratory investigation by Jorge González Martínez and co-authors. Changes in the expression of glutamate transporters may play a role in the expression of epileptogenicity. Previous studies have shown an increased number of neuronal glutamate transporters in human dysplastic neurons. The expression of glial and neuronal glutamate transporters and glutamine synthetase in balloon cells and balloon cell-containing cortical dysplasia has not previously been studied. The authors analyzed neocortical samples resected in 5 patients who had medically intractable focal epilepsy due to cortical dysplasia. These patients also underwent prolonged extraoperative electrocorticographic recordings. The expressions of glial and neuronal glutamate transporters and glutamine synthetase proteins were immunohistochemically studied in all 5 resected samples. The authors also assessed in situ colocalization of glutamate transporters and glutamine synthetase with neuronal and glial markers. The authors found that balloon cell-containing cortical dysplasia lesions did not exhibit ictal patterns on prolonged extraoperative electrocorticographic recordings. The majority of balloon cells highly expressed glial but not neuronal glutamate transporters. The results of the study suggest that the increased co-expression of glial glutamate transporters and glutamate metabolism in balloon cells may lead to focal increase in glutamate clearance and metabolism. This results in the absence of in situ ictal epileptic patterns in balloon cell-rich regions, but not in their surrounding balloon cell-deprived but dysplastic areas. At the clinical level, this study confirms the author's previous report that areas of the most significant focal signal increase on FLAIR MR imaging may contain most of the balloon cells, but more importantly may not delineate the precise location and extent of the epileptogenic zone. Thank you for listening to the Journal of Neurosurgery. To listen to more of our podcasts, please visit us at thejns.org. You can also follow the JNS on Twitter.